I'm Laura Schillingford-Clark. This is number 0253 of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0253. And on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Elizabeth Meyer, who is the author of Gender Bullying and Harassment: Strategies to End Sexism and Homophobia in Schools.
There's sort of an ebb and flow in terms of like incidences of bullying. I mean, we definitely have a greater public awareness around all kinds of forms of bullying, but specifically in the past 4 or 5 years, there's been a much more attention to bullying based on gender expression and sexual orientation. And that is actually thanks to the media's willingness to start talking about these things, particularly, you know, there was that spate of suicides in 2010 that led to the It Gets Better project, and that really did help break the silence and allow a lot of families and students and schools to start addressing these issues head on.
Pete Trabuco, author of America's Top Roller Coasters and Amusement Parks, talks about water parks.
Amusement parks are great, but during the day, especially midday, wouldn't it be great if you could actually have a water park that's attached in some way, shape, or form to these amusement parks and have a way to escape the heat rather than just go back to the hotel and come back? And a lot of the places that we talk about have both. They actually have the amusement park as well as the water park attached to it, and that way they get the visitors all day, in fact.
We'll play Red Skelton's tribute to Canada from 1990.
I'm a 76-year-old visitor in your country, and I've always felt that Canada was more than a neighbor, for we've always shook hands across the border and never our fist.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest Slater. The person who told you this was show number 0253 was Laura Schillingford-Clark, owner and operator of Oh My Dog Holistic Care, which is here in Montreal, and also she's your local crazy dog lady. Those are her words, not mine. You can find out more about her by going to her Facebook page for more information. And thank you very much, Laura, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? You know, just last week on the show, we told you the story of about a guy who was propositioning what he thought was a hooker, turned out it was an undercover cop, by offering her a salad from Applebee's in exchange for sex. Well, we have another story involving food and sex, and trust me, this isn't a review of the movie 9 1/2 Weeks. If you thought salads were kinky, well, listen to this. A Pennsylvania man accused of using Swiss cheese to sexually proposition unsuspecting women has pleaded guilty and been sentenced to probation. Christopher Pagano pleaded guilty to indecent exposure and harassment. In addition to 8 months of probation, he must undergo sex offender counseling. The 42-year-old was arrested in January after three women reported that a man had driven up to them and offered them money to put cheese on his genitals and perform a lewd act. Now, a fourth victim later came forward. The story went viral after a Philadelphia neighborhood watch group posted a blurry cell phone picture on its Facebook page of a half-naked man in his car holding what appears to be cheese. The group dubbed him the Swiss cheese pervert. Now, how does a fetish like this even get started? Yeah. And we're also guessing he's not lactose intolerant. Meanwhile, marking Japan's latest unfathomable social trend, two paperback photo books, both consisting only of portraits of the rear ends of hamsters, yes, you heard right, have experienced surprising and still growing printing runs. Japanese society has long seemed easily captured by anything considered kawaii or cute, and a representative of one book's publisher called his volume delightfully cute. I can't stop smiling, he said, when I see these butts. Okay. The two books in print are Hamuketsu, hope I'm pronouncing that right, Hamuketsu, which, by the way, translates to hamster buttocks, and Hamuketsu, so cute you could faint. A third, the original Hamuketsu, is set to debut this month. Okay, again, I have to ask the question, how does something like this start? You know, the guy who photographs the first hamster but couldn't possibly foresee that what he was capturing would be a thrill of a larger audience. Or was he that smart that he could? A Colorado man who was accused of smoking methamphetamine is now facing attempted murder charges after he allegedly was able to squeeze off two shots at Denver police officers from a gun that was hidden in his butt. Another butt story. I sense a theme here. Isaac Virgil was being brought to the police station after officers repeatedly searched him when he somehow managed to open fire. Virgil stopped firing when his gun jammed and officers shot him in the stomach. By the way, when you have a gun in your butt, I don't think you want it to jam. Or then again, maybe you do. The 32-year-old was taken into custody after he was seen smoking methamphetamine in a McDonald's parking lot on May the 14th. Virgil was facing numerous charges, including possession of drug paraphernalia, assault, felony menacing, and possession of a weapon. It was difficult to search Virgil because he was violent and aggressive and highly agitated, but officers reported that the suspect was patted down three times. Now, prior to the shooting, Virgil threatened to shoot the officers several times and claimed that he had been smoking meth for 3 days. In addition to the handgun, Virgil had two baggies of meth stashed in his rectal area. That's quite the carry-on. This is the kind of guy you want to pack your luggage because apparently he can get a lot of stuff into very tight places. But then again, perhaps you don't want him to pack your bags, considering the kind of stuff that he packs. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a 25-year-old New Zealand woman is in hospital, or actually she was in hospital, to have her ovaries removed due to pain and cramps, and was instead found to be pregnant. Yes, Rebecca Oldham had already been put under anesthesia in November when surgeons discovered that she was 32 weeks pregnant with a 9-pound baby. I was facing not being able to have any more children because they thought there were problems with my ovaries, and all of a sudden, we had a son, she said, adding that she and her husband, James, have a 20-month-old daughter, Haley. Doctors woke Oldham up from anesthesia to tell her that they were about to perform a cesarean section to deliver her baby instead of removing her ovaries. I am so glad they woke me up and told me that I was going to have another baby, she said. Even though it was short notice, it was better than waking up and then being handed a baby. Well, she's got a point there, I guess. Oldham told the New Zealand Herald that she had had blood tests and other tests after she started complaining of pain in her abdomen, but doctors never discovered her pregnancy. The couple named the surprise baby James. One Serbian study, by the way, suggests up to 1 in 7,225 women don't realize they're pregnant until delivery. Well, that's a fine howdy-do, ain't it? Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, shall we? Elizabeth Meyer is a professor at California Polytechnic State University. She is also the author of two books, including Gender Bullying and Harassment, Strategies to End Sexism and Homophobia in Schools. She joins us on the line from California right now to talk about that very topic. Hi, Elizabeth.
Good evening.
Thanks for being on the program with us.
So happy to be here.
As someone who studies this issue, I'm wondering, are things getting better? Because I sense there's a ramp up in certainly everyone talking about it, certainly everyone discussing it in the media. And sometimes when you discuss things in the media, you get the impression it's happening more than less. So which is
it? Yes, you're absolutely right. There's sort of an ebb and flow in terms of like incidences of bullying, particularly bullying around issues of gender expression and sexual orientation. I mean, we definitely have a greater public awareness around all kinds of forms of bullying, but specifically in the past 4 or 5 years, there's been a much more attention to bullying based on gender expression and sexual orientation. And that is actually thanks to the media's willingness to start talking about these things, particularly, you know, there was that spate of suicides in 2010 that led to the It Gets Better project, and that really did help break the silence and allow a lot of families and students and schools to start addressing these issues head on. So I do feel like it's getting better, but there is always backlash when you see improvements.
Now, when you hear these situations, when you hear these stories, is there a common factor here pertaining to how someone handles what is being thrown their way? And by that I mean, is part of the problem that some of the people who are subjected to bullying and sexual harassment aren't necessarily finding a comforting home situation?
Well, that could be one common variable. I mean, there are a lot of different factors that go into it, but one of the things that I found in my research, which I did in a school board in the Montreal area, was that there is this common cultural acceptance of sexist and homophobic behaviors in high schools, that teachers in general would deal with lots of kinds of name-calling and bullying, but they were less willing to deal with anti-gay or anti-female, like sexual-oriented kinds of statements. And so that was something where students, even though they might be going home and not be getting support, they're also not getting the support of teachers in the school because teachers just didn't know what to say, or they didn't feel like they'd be supported by their administration, or they were worried that there would be backlash from parents if they talked about these issues in really proactive, integrated ways. So it's difficult for youth who are grappling with their identities, trying to come to terms and develop a healthy sense of self when they're not getting the support and affirmation from adults around them.
It would be lovely to live in a world where there is no bullying going on, no harassment, either by gender, sexual orientation, race, whatever the case may be. But the reality is that school is a microcosm of the world that is out there. So having said that, if we make a school as safe as humanly possible and it was zero tolerance, is it also, in a way, a bit of a disservice when people get out into the real world?
Well, I feel like schools are sort of artificial environments in many ways because there are very few places where you are obliged to go all day, every day, and if you don't go, you're arrested. I mean, we really have a very strong compulsory attendance, and so you have these very intense social environments because these youth come into contact with each other all day, every day, and they're not really allowed to leave unless they have some really extenuating circumstances. So I feel like what we should be doing as educators is educating for the kind of world we want to live in. And so by working with youth to be more tolerant, to be more supportive, to be more appreciative of differences of all kinds, we will actually be projecting into the future the kinds of people we want running our communities and leading our countries in the future. And so I don't think it is in any way, you know, doing a disservice to youth, because youth need a healthy, safe place to develop a sense of self, to learn skills, and to figure out how to deal with these things with support. So when they do get into the real world, it doesn't so devastatingly destroy their core sense of being if some negative things happen to them. And so when these things happen to youth as they're developing, it is really devastating. And one particular population is transgender and gender creative youth. And that's a project that I started on in Montreal before I moved to California. And the second book you mentioned, the Supporting Transgender and Gender Creative Youth book, emerged out of a conference that we had at Concordia back in October of 2012. And we have an amazing community group coming together called gendercreativekids.ca is the website. And it's finding ways to help families, youth, other youth advocates to come together to find ways to not only support the youth who are going through some very difficult identity development processes, but also to educate communities, youth workers, school climates, so we can have these healthier, safer environments where youth can develop and grow and not be at risk for all kinds of negative behaviors.
you went to school here in Montreal. You also worked here in Montreal for a bit. You're originally from New York, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Well, I was born in San Francisco, but my dad was military, so I taught in New York for a couple of years.
Okay, so you know the big city of New York, and you're now in California. Again, very large metropolitan areas. Is this as big a problem or a bigger problem in smaller, rural, what we like to call the flyover states? Same thing with the flyover provinces. Is that a bigger problem there?
Well, there's definitely an urban-rural divide, because in urban areas, like you have Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, are sort of really amazing places where youth, particularly lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender youth, can find resources, supports, and peer groups. When you get into the plains and the areas where it's less densely populated, it's a lot more difficult for youth to find that kind of affirming environment, to find youth groups and peers who can help them go through what they are going through. I mean, the internet actually can be a really healthy and amazing place for youth to find connections when they don't have that face-to-face space they do in urban areas. But actually, one of the chapters in our book is an amazing case study of a program in Alberta, in a small community between Edmonton and Calgary, where they were able to put together a very thriving youth community that was able to affirm and support youth of all diverse gender identities and sexual orientations. So there are challenges, and I know there's another great chapter from a professor at Trent, which is more rural Ontario, where she writes about some of the challenges that youth in rural Ontario experience. So there are different challenges, but there are also some amazing work being done in those spaces as well.
How do you deal with the bullies? And the reason why I asked that question is hate, like water, will travel the path of least resistance. And sometimes where you send it next is worse than where it was going before. So how do you deal with that?
Well, some of the best ways is really to try to develop a community that is focused around issues of equity and social justice and affirmation of all kinds of difference, where students are allowed to talk about the things that make them uncomfortable or the things that they've been taught to hate in many ways. Because if they don't get a healthy outlet and some additional information, that hate can fester, and then those youth can become involved in the criminal justice system, and they end up having a very negative trajectory in their adulthood. So the education system is a place for us to help youth deal with those negative influences, because some of it is coming from the home or from the neighborhood or some other older peers that might not be as positive in their influence. So we do need to kind of combat hate with love, with information, and with an attention to human rights and social justice, which is at the core of the fabric of Canadian and Quebec society, which I think needs to be stronger and better infused throughout our school communities.
The world seems to be, and I say seems to be, becoming a kinder, gentler place. But on the other side of that coin, you have the world of social media, where it can be very ugly out there. How do you deal with that?
Absolutely, and that's what I was talking about before, because most people think, oh, social media, cyberbullying, it's a terrible, dangerous, deadly place, and it can be because of the anonymity that it affords youth, that they can be really negative and horrible to each other, things they would never do face-to-face. But the strength that social media can offer many youth is a community that they wouldn't necessarily find in their own school or in their own neighborhood. So it allows them to connect and find information and get human ideas and affirmation from people who might not come in contact with them face-to-face. I mean, we do need to do a better job in schools teaching students about the dangers of online culture and community, and teaching them to be more media savvy and critical readers of the media, and understanding the dangers of posting certain things and the public, you know, ness of their profiles, whether it be on Pinterest or Twitter or that sort of thing. But for the most part, I think our youth are incredibly smart about the way they use social media. We just as adults need to give them more tools and resources and be more aware of the spaces they're going in and kind of the codes of conduct that are operating there, because so many teachers and adults just have no clue about all of these spaces like Tumblr and Snapchat and other kinds of sites that are really like part of the everyday life of teenagers. So we need to be more involved and more aware as well.
I guess one of the first steps, too, is to educate the teachers.
Absolutely. And that's something that I'm constantly doing, is going out and talking about this work, my books, the websites, doing kinds of professional development. And as a teacher educator, that's what I get to do all day, every day. That's what I did at Concordia. That's what I'm doing here at Cal Poly. And it's really an important passion of mine to be able to work with future teachers to make sure they're best equipped to deal with the future of the schools. They want to know what's going on in schools today, but they also need to be prepared what's going to be happening 5-10 years down the road.
You mentioned the website. I know your website is ElizabethJMeyer.com. What will people find when they go there?
They find information about my books and resources, specifically around gender-based and sexual orientation-based harassment, a series of talks and links to other publications, as well as, you know, my Twitter feed. If people are interested in following me on Twitter, I'm at Liz J. Meyer, as well as, you know, the Concordia University It Gets Better video, which I was a part of, and other kinds of information if people are interested in consulting services or just getting more information. That's a way they can reach me and get more access to good research, because the emphasis in schools now is on evidence-based practice. And I'm more than happy to connect teachers and administrators with the research that is out there so they can make better decisions for their school communities.
Elizabeth, thank you very much for being on the program with us. It was a pleasure talking to you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Professor Elizabeth Meyer, author of Gender, Bullying, and Harassment, Strategies to End Sexism and Homophobia in Schools, and also the co-author of Supporting Transgender and Gender Creative Youth, Schools, Families, and Communities in Action. You can check out her website at ElizabethJMeyer.com. You can go to my website at TheStuffFile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0253, and you'll find links to Elizabeth's site, plus also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File, now with 25% fewer calories. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about water parks, plus we'll hear Red Skelton's tribute to Canada, and of course there will be indeed an Idiot of the Day and much more Stuff File news right here, right now on a program also heard, you know it, on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, in what seems to be a recurring theme, another driver died after being unable to dodge his own vehicle. A 58-year-old man was hit by his SUV in New York City in June after he double-parked and was opening the door on the passenger side and realized that the vehicle was still in reverse gear. He tried to jam one foot on the brake, but hit the gas instead, causing the car to jump backward, ejecting him and pinning him between the SUV and a van parked alongside. The man suffered a heart attack and died as his vehicle broke free and drifted across the busy Manhattan intersection of Madison Avenue and East 49th Street. I've heard that parking spots in New York are to die for, but this is ridiculous. Okay, this next story is the kind of tale that I really don't like to share because I like cops. Before I was born, both my dad and uncle were police officers, and my best friend on the planet spent 25 years pounding a beat. But unfortunately, I have to share this latest moron with a badge tale. In the second such incident report here in 4 months, an overenthusiastic police officer handcuffed and detained a firefighter working a 911 call, ostensibly because the firefighter refused to stop work and move his fire truck to the police officer's satisfaction. Like the earlier incident I had mentioned a few months ago in California, the unequivocal state law in Louisiana makes it illegal for anyone to interfere with a firefighter on an emergency call, and the officer from the New Roads, Louisiana Police Department, in principle, faces a stiff fine and possible jail sentence. Oh, how I wanted to make him the idiot of the day, but I didn't. That comes later. And anyway, that's not just stupid. That's a power trip. Yeah. Anyway, Orthodox Judaism requires a divorcing spouse to obtain the permission of the other via a document called a get, leaving much power in the hands of the responding spouse, and leading to an occasional resort of trickery or violence to persuade an uncooperative spouse. In May, Lakewood, New Jersey, Rabbi Mendel Epstein, his son, and three other men were indicted for scheming to use electric cattle prods on behalf of wives against recalcitrant husbands. Four other men in the alleged scheme have already pleaded guilty. According to prosecutors, Rabbi Epstein had been implicated in other over-the-top efforts to obtain gets in 2009 and 2010, and the indictment charges, the 2013 episode, also involved kidnapping, surgical blades, and a screwdriver. Ooh, wow. What kind of strong-arm tactics does he use when he's actually marrying people? Ooh. Moving right along, if Tiny Iceland were a worldly cultural showcase, it is the Icelandic Phallological Museum, founded in Reykjavik in 1997, and housing 300 penises, or would that be peni, and penal parts from 93 different animals. Anyway, so far, however, it lacks an exhibition-worthy human penis. That omission is about to be remedied as Mr. Jonah Falcon, a New York City D-list celebrity with an organ that measures 13 and a half inches, has accepted an invitation to donate, presumably not in the flesh, but until he dies. And by the way, you can Google Jonah Falcon and find out more information about him, the man with the world's largest penis. He's all over the internet. Falcon notably refuses to appear in pornography, but he says that he regards this mission, for what Huffington Post calls the Louvre of penises, as a higher calling. Now, his member is allegedly, as I said, the largest in the world, which I think is just going to be a bone of contention with many who will visit when that day comes. And pardon the pun on all of those lines I just mentioned there. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, former NYPD officer, 30-year-old Gilberto Valle, was convicted in 2013 of conspiring to kidnap and torture and then cook and eat the corpses of an unsuspected number of women he had listed on the website called darkfetishnet.com. And by the way, for the purposes of, you know, researching this story, I went to the homepage of darkfetishnet.com. Some stuff I'll never be able to unsee. Just the homepage I went to, no further. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yes. Gilberto, even though he was convicted, he insists that he was merely a harmless fantasy storyteller. Well, now, as he awaits sentencing at a New York City prison, officials have allowed him to train as a chef, preparing breakfast and lunch for inmates and guards. Although his wife divorced him and took their one child, other family members and friends support him, including fellow prisoners who joke with Valet about the irony. Said his mother, the only thing he's guilty of is being stupid enough to be on that website. Okay, so the court system found him guilty, and if that is the case, why, for the love of God, are they training this guy to be a chef? Who the hell is letting him anywhere near the opportunity to prepare meals? I mean, I'm a little unsettled about who he might be serving up. Aren't you? Just a little bit? Just a smidge? A soupçon? Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Pete Tribuco is a travel expert who is also a bit of a thrill seeker. He is the author of America's Top Roller Coasters and Amusement Parks. We talked to him about roller coasters a while back, but this time around he's on to talk about water parks. Hi, Peter.
How are you doing today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, you first came out with your book back in 2009 talking about roller coasters and amusement parks, and we talked about that book when it first came out. But I was curious to talk a little bit about something else that is growing out there, and that is the water park.
No, it's absolutely true. In fact, my next book, which comes out next summer, spring, summer, is going to be including the top water parks all over the country, United States, as well as in around the world. Because let's face it, amusement parks are great, but during the day, especially midday, wouldn't it be great if you could actually have a water park that's attached in some way, shape, or form to these amusement parks, and have a way to escape the heat rather than just go back to the hotel and come back? And a lot of the places that we talk about have both. They actually have the amusement park as well as the water park attached to it, and that way they get the customers or the visitors all day. In fact,
now when did the advent of the water park become as big as it is becoming now?
Well, you know, you have to go back to Disney, and of course nobody does it better than Walt Disney World, where they would come together and obviously put together, you know, some great things like Wet n' Wild in Orlando, Florida, and of course all the Disney parks that basically put together the water parks. That seemed to start a whole trend towards, you know, let's get a bigger and better water park. Let's combine it with something else and let's make it work. And it has been very, very successful. You'll find that a lot of amusement parks, in fact, one right where I live, I'm sure you've heard of it, the Six Flags Great Adventure, and that is in Jackson, New Jersey. Several years back, actually added a water park, a massive water park. In fact, now Six Flags is the biggest amusement park in the world, with the acreage and, of course, with the travel area that they have opened up as well. So it's something that was a brainstorm by Disney, and it just caught on. And now you've got some great ones. Of course, the one that comes to mind right off the bat, of course, is Wisconsin Dells and Noah's Ark. It's just an amazing place to go to. Have you ever been there, by the way?
No, I have not. I'll tell you right off the bat, I am not the biggest fan of water generally. You will not submerge me in anything.
Well, Noah's Ark is in Wisconsin Dells in Wisconsin, and you would think that people probably would know about it, but it really is kind of a big secret. It's got about 50 thrilling water rides, a 4D drive-in theater, two giant wave pools, and it's really, really kid-friendly as well, plus some nice drops, and just absolutely an amazing place to go to if you've got kids. But it's not on anybody's radar, so it's like people think about it and say, well, where is that, and why is it so great? They have been doing this for years, and believe it or not, they're not even attached to another organization like an amusement park or something along those lines. So what they have done has actually been incredible in that they can actually do this and be so successful without even advertising that much, and that's how they've done that. There's just so many out there.
Okay, so for those who aren't familiar with water parks, I'm guessing that the first water park rides, the first water park rides were basically a ride or two that was part of an amusement park, and somebody got the idea, hey, we need more of these, and maybe separate from the rest. Would that be a fair assessment?
Well, originally, all the water parks were actually inside an amusement park. There was a section of an amusement park that you would have these water rides in. So you'd have a place to change, you know, there'd be a place to actually change your clothes. But it was small. It was extremely small. Maybe you find two or three water slides, maybe if you're lucky, a wave, a small wave pool within the actual park itself. You know, you pay one price to get into the park. You bring your bathing suit. There's lockers for you. You can change and then go from there. And they were finding out that it was going very well, and to the point where people wanted more. And then competition came on board, and you've got some, you know, great places that have done such a fantastic job. But they realized that they don't need to have an amusement park right on premises and just share the park with them. They could actually go ahead and do this all by themselves. And that has been very, very successful for the majority of the people, you know, that have done this.
So besides fun in the water, what are some of the actual thrill rides, if any, that one can find at a water park?
You can find pretty much anything and everything that you could possibly think of. And there's too many to actually go through. But I can tell you that the rides that you'll find there are not just your, go down a slide or do something like that. They've got rides that actually will turn you upside down. They'll flip you. You pretend like you're actually in a toilet bowl, and it'll go down the toilet into a main area. They've got rides for kids, rides for adults. They've got rides now that are actually as tall as roller coasters that when you get on that thing and you go straight down, wedgies are going to definitely happen, so you got to be careful about that. But these rides are very high-tech these days. They're not the simple, you know, little rides that you would think of, that you would do. And, of course, you've got the kiddie parks as well. What comes to mind is Schlitterbahn with the Poliwag and the squirt and slide. Things like that are things for the kids. But you've got some really major attractions at these places. And right now you've got the tallest and fastest of these rides over at Schlitterbahn. So, and that's, by the way, in Texas, in Galveston, South Padre Island, and New Braunfels. Really great place to go. And, again, another one off the radar that you wouldn't think of. You would think of all the Disney attractions and maybe Water Park USA and Busch Gardens and several others around the world. But you wouldn't think Schlitterbahn would be constantly on the top list of places to go. But obviously the area, you're down in Texas, it's very hot down there. So, you know, if you're in that Sun Belt, it's a great place to have a water park.
Are some of these water parks now giving traditional amusement parks a run for their money?
Not really, because it's a different market. A lot of them are actually attaching themselves to an amusement park because, you know, and a lot of amusement parks are actually using that to attach themselves to a water park because they go together. Usually, prior to this whole water park craze, the deal was you go to Disneyland, Disney World, or some of the major amusement parks, and like Cedar Point, for example, in Sandusky, Ohio, and Magic Kingdom over in California, and Busch Gardens, and you would just spend the day, well, the morning maybe, at a park, or maybe an evening in a park. And during the day, you'd be at the pool. You'd be just hanging out at the pool, reading your book, enjoying yourself, but at the same time, detached from the park and not making the park any money at this point. So what happened was, again, they decided that it was best to actually include them into the amusement park. So there was a section for people that wanted to just do that. And it just grew from that point on to what it is now. And I would say, in most cases, maybe 80% of the cases, the amusement parks are working directly with the water parks or co-owned by the amusement parks and water parks or part of the company, like Cedar Fair owns water parks as well as amusement parks. Same thing with Six Flags and same thing with Disney. And I believe Universal will be getting into that soon as well as most likely Legoland. So, you know, it's important to actually combine all of them together. And like you're afraid of the water, there's so many other things you can do There's cabanas where you can get televisions, watch stuff. You know, you can just hang out under, you know, under the in the shade in the cabana while your kids are doing their thing, and you don't really necessarily have to go in the water. And if you do, you can just go into the little wave pool, which doesn't have much, and just soak your feet or something. So there's a lot to do, and some places even have entertainment. So there is a lot to do at these water parks these days.
Now, when it comes to choosing a water park or a theme park in general, do you have any tips for researching a new destination? Of course, beyond getting your book, America's Top Roller Coasters and Amusement Parks.
Well, you know, there's a lot out there. In fact, I'll go through a quick list of some of the best parks out there, water parks out there. But you want to go with a place that's going to give you a nice discount. I tend to want you to do that. If you're going to go ahead and do that, you're probably probably better to actually go and do it with a park that's attached to a water park, an amusement park that's attached to a water park, because you get some really, really, really great deals. And you know, you're able to get from one location to another very quickly. They might have a bus or shuttle service, or it might be close enough just to walk through a gate to the other side. And if you've got your passes, you go right in. So I would plan ahead. I would try to get a place that is close by to an amusement park or part of the amusement park, because you will not beat the deals that you get. Although there are places that you can go to, the most important thing is make sure that the park that you're going to has not just the crazy stuff. You know, you want family type of experiences as well. And most of these water parks we're talking about, with 50 and 60 and 70 different types of rides, offer everything or something for everything in the family. Some crazy stuff where you could actually go up hills with water pushing you all along the way, or you can just go with rides that just take you around. There's lazy rivers all the time that you can go on. So you want to make sure that everyone is happy. Food is good, entertainment is good, because of course you got people that don't like the water. You got to give them something to do. There's shopping that you can do. There are restaurants that you can go to in order to to enjoy yourself. So I think that's the key. Stick with something that it's got a real good name attached to an amusement park somewhere, and you'll do very well.
Excellent. Always a pleasure to talk to you. Again, the book is America's Top Roller Coasters and Amusement Parks by Pete Trabuco. And Pete, I thank you very much for being on the program with us once again. Enjoy your summer.
And you too. And remember, there are also great amusement parks and water parks all over the world. And just real quickly, Chim Long Water Park in China. You got Noah's Ark, we talked about it, Wisconsin Dells. In Puerto Rico, you got Las Cascadas Water Park. If you're going on any vacation up in Alberta, Canada, you've got the World Water Park, Water Country USA, Virginia, and that's just in Busch Gardens. Slitterbound, we talked about. Las Cascadas Water Park in Puerto Rico, the World Water Park in Alberta, and Water Country USA was the other one that we mentioned. The Sandcastle in the United Kingdom, and Sunway Lagoon in Malaysia. And Wet and Wild Water in Australia. These are all great, including the ones we've talked about. So it's a fun time. Have fun and enjoy your summer.
Thank you very much, Peter.
You're welcome.
Pete Trabuco, author of America's Top Roller Coasters and Amusement Parks. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0253, and you'll find the links to Pete's website and also links to Amazon.com, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob Dorigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. In 1776, Thomas Jefferson said that judges should be a mere machine. What did he mean by that? Well, a properly working machine runs as directed, so he meant that judges should follow the directions of legislators who made the law, as long as it's constitutional. A lot of political experts today like to measure judges by whether they're conservative or liberal, but the first job of judges is to enforce the law, even when they don't agree with it. A few years ago, a judge on the Wisconsin Supreme Court explained Jefferson's philosophy this way. She said that if a state's highest court is working as it should, it will issue conservative rulings when conservatives control the legislature and liberal rulings when liberals control it. Let's be fair. When judges set aside politics and enforce the law, they create confidence in the law. One reason that's so important is that it gives job providers the confidence they need to grow and expand. And that's something America needs now more than ever. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
Let's go! You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Batteries not included, some assembly required.
And still to come on the program, we'll hear Red Skelton's tribute to Canada. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day, but we have a few more Stuff File news stories to get to before we get to that juncture of the program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Here's a quote of the day. I did it for the family. That's what 51-year-old Ronald Scott Catt insists. He says, I swear to you, I would only rob banks for my family. Well, maybe not for his family, but with his family. After his wife died of cancer, Catt started robbing banks to help pay the bills. After several successful robberies, he recruited his teenage son Hayden to help. He and the boy pulled off another job without getting caught. Ronald was laid off from his day job, so he moved the family from Portland, Oregon to Houston, Texas, and he and Hayden started planning their first robbery there. Deciding that they needed a getaway driver, the two persuaded Hayden's sister, Abigail, to join them in the capers. Their first Texas job netted them $70,000, the second $30,000. By then, the kids were adults, and a detective figured out who the gang was, and they were all arrested. Ronald has been sentenced to 24 years in prison. Hayden, now 21, received a 10-year sentence, and Abigail, 19, got 5 years. Hayden is a good kid, said the son's attorney, James Hanley. Hopefully he can use his powers for good and get on with his life. Yes, only a lawyer would recast a bank robber as a superhero. Now that's a family tree that really needs pruning, starting from the roots. And you may remember a story we told you a couple of months ago about a guy in Florida named Edward Cocaine who was arrested for drugs. Well, charges have been dropped in the case because, this is in Broward County. The 34-year-old Cocaine proved that he had a prescription for the pills that he was carrying when arrested in April at a traffic stop. I'm very happy, Cocaine said afterward. Naturally high. I bet he's used that line once or twice in the past. Cocaine said it was pretty cool that his arrest went viral online thanks to his unusual name. I was famous for a minute. But, you know, things aren't so happy for another Floridian who has been arrested a second time. Her first arrest was for marijuana possession. Her second was for shooting an offensive missile into a vehicle in Polk County. Reports didn't reveal exactly what sort of missile was involved. But they noted that Crystal Matheny, age 36, was released after posting $5,000 in bail. Okay, when your last name is Matheny and you name your child Crystal, you are looking for a lifetime of trouble. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, text message number 6 said, so, S-O-O-O-O-O. And the sender may not have liked the response. His first two messages had said, who is this? And I am Boo. And he followed them with pictures of a man in just a black thong, a man in lingerie, and a man in nothing at all bending over to look behind him at the camera. But if he wanted to seduce someone, the man probably should not have picked the Marco Island, Florida police to receive his pictures. 30-year-old Paul Arnold Curlies was arrested on obscenity and stalking charges. And thanks to alcohol, he told police he had little recollection of the evening. Well, thankfully, at least there are pictures to jog his memory. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, a rodeo on private property in Castleville, Georgia, was interrupted by an uninvited and drunk man. Guests asked him to leave. Instead, the man pulled a gun and started shooting, scattering the 300 attendees until one of the rodeo cowboys lassoed him. Several in the crowd then jumped and beat the gunman. Three people were treated for superficial gunshot wounds. Police identified the gunman as Celestino Moras, age 25, and noted that he was treated for minor injuries of his own before he was jailed. Is this a new rodeo record, by the way, for gunman roping? I'm sure it is. And also, that must have been one fast police response, considering the gunman only had minor injuries after being beaten by a mob of rodeo fans. That's all I got to say for that. Anyway, let's get to our next segment. Not quite our guest, but a next segment. It's kind of a retro thing. Back in March of 1989, a comic legend Red Skelton was performing here in Canada in our nation's capital of Ottawa at the Ottawa National Arts Centre. Now, during his time in the city, Red, along with Tom Kalin from Kalin Imports, toured the major sites of the city, such as the House of Commons and the National Arts Gallery. Along the way, they heard a poorly sung version of the national anthem. As an American who loved Canada, this inspired Red to compose his interpretation of what the words of Canada's national anthem meant to him. In 20 minutes, he had penned Tribute to Canada. Now, back when it came out, it garnered a lot of attention, including major radio play across the country. I remember playing it back in the day and even talking briefly to Red about it off air when he later came to Montreal to perform. I thought, since we're not too far from Canada Day, which is on July 1st, I would play Red's tribute. So, without further ado, here is Red Skelton's Tribute to Canada.
I'm a 76-year-old visitor in your country, and I've always felt that Canada was more than a neighbor, for we've always shook hands across the border and never our fists. The other day, I heard your national anthem being sung. Some of the voices were loud, some mumbled the words, some slipped through like it had become monotonous to them. Or could it have been that they do not know the meaning of those words? If I may, I would like to recite your national anthem and give you the meaning that I received from the words. O Canada, I see mountains and valleys and rivers and trees. It's truly Mother Nature's warehouse. Our home and native land, a place where families live with dignity on rich soil that shares food and beauty. True patriots, patriotism, a pride, a privilege to say, I, me, an individual, a committee of one, dedicate all of my worldly good to give without self-pity. Love and all thy sons command, that powerful youth that gives all their love and devotion, holding a standard with a maple leaf high in the air, for it's a symbol of courage, and wherever she waves there is respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts freedom is everybody's job. With glowing hearts we see thee rise, a warmth that incubates incentive, wisdom that sees beyond superstition and ignorance. The true north, she's that compass needle that points to inspiring realities. Strong, courage beyond that struggle to find a dream and make it come true. Free, that right of power for one to live his own life without fears, threats, or any sort of retaliations. From far and wide, not just to the horizon, but beyond creeds, protest, and symbols, but with an insight and understanding for all. O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. Not that we want to flaunt our strength, but to be capable of facing the strongest should that enemy appear. God keep our land glorious and free. That means justice, the principle and qualities of dealing fairly with others. O Canada, we stand on guard for thee. We protect all doctrines and share thy spirit with logic and reason. O Canada, we stand on guard for thee, so we can say to a neighbor, it's as much my country as it is yours. O Canada.
That's kind of nice, isn't it? Anyway, we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We have time for one more item, and of course, that would be the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A police officer in Gloucester County, Pennsylvania, discovered a structure fire shortly after midnight and called in firefighters. The blaze, which destroyed the unoccupied mobile home, looked suspicious, so investigators did something that seemed to have become a standard crime investigation technique nowadays. They checked social media for evidence. Sure enough, police say they found a video posted on Facebook showing two brothers inside the mobile home and one of them lighting the fire. By 6:30 a.m., Anthony F. Petalina, age 22, and Gerald J. Petalina, age 30, were in custody, charged with arson. Anthony had posted the video on his own Facebook page. The reporter on the story noted that attempts to reach relatives of the brothers were unsuccessful. Well, have you tried sending them a note on Facebook? Anyway. Now, stories like this are happening way too often, but we still have to ask the question, why, oh why, would someone commit a crime and then post video of it up on Facebook? Well, one reason, and one reason only, because they're idiots!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0253. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0253. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.